Special shout out to our Patreons. Thank you for supporting the show this month, Rob and Angela. If you'd like to join the ranks of our supporters, just go to patreon.com/thewholerabbit, where you can subscribe for only $5 a month to receive all your shows early, a bonus show each month, and all the high-resolution artwork once I get off my lazy butt to do more artwork. Until then, thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
She don't believe in any of that Catholic guilt. She has no Catholic guilt.
Same here. Like,
no, she was raised Catholic though.
Oh, that's terrible.
She was raised and beat Catholic into her. She has no Catholic guilt. She has less Catholic guilt than I do. And I asked her about it. I was like, why? Like,
because she transferred all of that genetic memory into your zygote.
And I started talking about all...
she's a Bene Jesuit?
Maybe she is, because I started talking about all the stuff that, like, bothered me and worried me. And I started talking about the Gospels of Thomas and about faith versus gnosis. And she's like, Luke, we're probably just made by some alien race that put all these ideas of God and faith and salvation and angels into us just to enslave us, man. And I was like, what the fuck did you just say, Mom? I was like, that's the most Gnostic fucking Black Iron Prison archonic shit I've ever heard. And you're just gonna let it fly like that, Mom? Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Whole Rabbit. I'm your host, Luke Madrid, and I'm joined by my co-host,
Andrew Haskins.
And we are, well... here's the thing. We're not just gonna send the rabbit to boarding school and make him eat with the other kids. Oh, hell no. We're gonna send him, this rabbit, to the most narrow-minded, bigoted, monolithic, ignorant, segmented, fragmented brand of cultist Christians and spank it on the booty until it gets a boner.
And then load it up with all the opium it can, like, handle.
And then make it climb some chalk cliffs.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, we're talking about Aleister Crowley.
We're talking Aleister Crowley. Welcome, everybody, to The Whole Rabbit. This is our first episode of Aleister Crowley, because we're not just going to spend an hour on this guy.
We're going to do a couple episodes.
It's kind of like The Shining. You know, there's just some stuff on the show that comes back over and over. You know, this show's about Aleister Crowley and The Shining at this point.
Like, we've had another episode where we did just the Book of the Law, and we had to give, like, kind of a brief overview of Aleister Crowley, but this is the big one. One of the big ones.
No, seriously, I don't think we've done a Book of the Law episode, or did we?
Yeah, we did a Book of the Law
episode. No, we didn't.
Yeah, we did.
Did we?
Yeah,
it was
probably the Thelema episode.
Okay, we did a Thelema episode.
I think we did the Book of the Law.
We did not do a Book of the Law episode.
No, we totally talked about the Book of the Law.
But though, we didn't do a Book of the... we could still do a Book of the Law episode, Andrew.
I guess we could just read it. But anyways, we're talking about Aleister Crowley.
Yes.
The most Crowleyest man himself. And, like, before you think, like, he's saying it wrong because Ozzy said it a certain way, like, Crowley himself had a little poem about it. It's called Crowley because he's holy, and then he's like, those who want to treat him foully call him Crowley. Yeah, he's like freaking L. Ron Hubbard when it comes to fucking poetry. Like, he is to poetry what L. Ron Hubbard is to, like, really lame sci-fi.
Listen, because you didn't show up with the poetry, Andrew, we're gonna make people pay for it. If you want us to read Aleister Crowley's poetry, sign up for $5 a month. We are going to read at least 3 Crowley poems for you. We'll read as many Crowley poems as you want on our Patreon.
We'll make funny voices as well.
That's fine.
Fuck it.
You know, Crowley early on in his life he was tongue tied. They had to cut his frenulum, like, right after he was born.
What's a frenulum?
That's the part that connects your tongue to your mouth.
Oh, wow, that's weird. So you need to be circumcised on the mouth.
Yeah, he wasn't going to be able to talk. So I guess we begin the story with...
the beginning?
I guess. Well, what is Crowley known for? There's a few things that, like, he's kind of special for. Like, for instance, he gave Aldous Huxley mescaline. Huxley had never had mescaline before that, so I guess thank you for Brave New World, Aleister Crowley. He broke all these mountain climbing records in the Himalayas for
shits and giggles.
Like, and I think stuff that's never been beaten. He's on the Sgt. Pepper's album cover.
Partying after his death, I guess.
Jimmy Page purchased his Loch Ness Mansion. Most of his magical writing is self-published, and he was the first one to publish The Secrets of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, and he wrote Diary of a Drug Fiend and Moonchild, his two fictional books, novels, which were not particularly successful.
Yeah, well, because novels suck.
And then some people think he wrote the Necronomicon as well.
Like, I heard from somebody that he gave all the Wiccan stuff to Gerald Gardner, and he's like, I'm not going to have anything to do with this. Like, don't you put my name anywhere near this.
Oh, yeah. Crowley invented Wicca.
That's like on the hush-hush for everybody in the know. Crowley invented Wicca to, like, seed paganism into Christianity.
Or just to get more chicks into magic, because the patriarchy was making magic some...
Don't you patriarchy me, man.
Look, man, we can't all just be sticking peepees in each other's butts. There has to be some pussy in the fucking lodge, dude. You can't just... You gotta put women on the level with men, or... Even slightly a little bit above, if we're talking like
shock teeth. We were there with Golden Dawn. They were letting women in.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah. That was like the whole thing. They were like the first to like let in women. Golden Dawn was pretty fucking progressive back in the day.
I guess we're supposed to start the episode just ranting about how evil Crowley is and like build him up or something.
Okay, this is also... thank you for saying the word rant. All right. Here's the funny thing about Crowley is every... time you actually look up Crowley or try to like hear somebody do some video on Crowley, you don't get to even hear about Crowley. You get to hear about the person's misconceptions of Crowley. Like, because I've heard like 1,000 fucking stories 1,000 different ways, and they're all different, and they all are like just make the other stories completely bunk or something, or it's the same story but different. It's kind of like mythological, this man's life, in a sense.
And it's, you know what I don't like, which we're going to try and fix in this series, is it's like assumed everyone just knows. It's like, oh yeah, man, you know Crowley? How he was involved in this secret project? Yeah, we know Crowley, he's a Satanist. We all know that.
Yeah, people are just like, oh, Crowley's the evil, like he's a freaking... some normie level understanding of, like, he's evil.
Oh, yeah, that's Aleister Crowley stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Aleister Crowley. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Alex Jones level. Aleister Crowley.
Aleister Crowley.
Oh, the spirit cooking.
Aleister is just turning the frogs gay.
Like Crowley's, they're in a, like, Alex Jones is right on some stuff, and he's goddamn entertaining. Oh, my God.
Yeah, like, that but spirit like, cooking lady's probably a pedophile. We know that.
Yeah, yeah. That was weird pedophile blood that we all know it. We all know that was pedophile.
But you can't get mad at people for art, you know. She's a pedophile. Let's get mad at her for being a pedophile, not because she makes cakes. You know, if you want to eat a cake as a person, you know, go fuck yourself. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But if you want to fuck kids, we can just shoot you and throw you in a pit, right? That's fine.
So, like, okay, let's build this guy's character and his profile, because, like, you got to understand, this guy's life is, like, absolutely messed up from the beginning. Because he's, like, born into, like, the craziest of the craziest of the craziest Christian cult. Like they don't celebrate Christmas or give gifts or just, like, or birthdays. They're, like, the freaking Unitarians or something.
It's the Plymouth Brethren, also known as the Darbyists. But we're not quite there yet. We have to get to how Crowley made all his money that he had to spend throughout his life. Because you know what I learned from researching Aleister Crowley is if you want to be the greatest occultist in the world, you got to have a little bit of money and time to expend on doing it. Because, I don't know, if you work 10 hours a day, you just don't have as many opportunities in the day to do it, I guess. Well, anyway, let's not fucking drown in our tears. So, Crowley's great-great-grandfather, Thomas Crowley, was a bit of a rebel himself, and also a self-published writer. Published various tracts, actually against his own Quaker faith, specifically in opposition to tithes and taxes. He even ran into Benjamin Franklin once and attempted to avert the American Revolution by pitching some of his political ideas to him. For instance, Thomas Crowley believed that many of the gripes of the colonists were well-founded, but military action against the crown was short-sighted, and he agreed with the idea of having American colonists having a seat in parliament to solve the problem. So that was something he was, like, probably pitching to great old Benjamin Franklin. But you get the impression here that, well, Benjamin Franklin was out, you know,
fucking
prostitutes in the Hellfire Club. You know, Crowley's great-great-grandfather was, you know, writing tracts against Quakers and trying to convince the Americans to not have a revolution. But it is interesting to know that Crowley's great-great-grandfather was a big self-publisher. And this is something that would follow down the Crowley line. There are some patterns, and that's why we're going so far back. So, it really wouldn't be Thomas Crowley that would establish all the wealth for the family. He stopped writing politically pretty much right after the revolution, because he was just over it. Like, after the revolution, he's like, no one's listening to me, I'm getting old. So,
he couldn't stop the war, so he gave up.
Pretty much. I think if I'm reading this right, he had 8 kids. 3 of his sons, Abraham, Charles, and Henry, they were all abolitionists, just like him. They married into the Curtis family of Alton, wherever that is, and they formed a business partnership. And
you don't know about the Curtis Stanley of Alton? Harumph! Harumph, I say, good sir, harumph. You're obviously a blackguard of the lower classes. Good day.
Right. That's all I'm giving you.
Yeah, you cockney bitch.
So here's the deal. These 3 Crowleys, Abraham, Charles, and Henry, they purchased the brew house on Turk Street in Alton.
Oh, so they're like brewing.
Now, yes. Now, here's the thing. Even though they were technically Quakers, they had had a property in their family for over 200 years brewing. Because I learned that although it's not okay to brew or consume hard spirits as a Quaker, there's nothing against brewing per se. So, it was kind of, they kind of in
just
the
just distilling and drinking it.
Yeah, you couldn't distill it and you couldn't really drink it, but you could brew.
So you can sell beer. You can't drink it. You can make it and you can sell it.
You can't sell the hard liquor.
Okay, so wait. So like, you can make the hard liquor and you can sell it, or you can't sell it.
No, you can't make the hard liquor, but you can make the brew. You can
make beer and then
yeah, you can so, make beer so and sell basically, it, but you can't drink the beer.
So you can. I think. Make it and you can push it, but you just can't get high on your own supply.
As long as it's beer.
Yeah.
That's the workaround. Now this, this sort of like...
This is some rules lawyering bullshit with Christians.
Yeah,
dude.
This whole...
Speaking of which, like most Christian sects, like their differences is like figuring out the differences on spellcasters and D&D. It's like, oh, well, we believe in a works-based thing. Is like, well, we believe in a faith-based thing, so it's all great if they believe in Christ. It's just like, god damn, dude, it's like you're like speaking like it's a fucking role-playing game and like somehow this is your class feature on how you pray properly.
Oh, and we're not, well, we're getting there, because Crowley ends up in the most like legalistic, narrow-minded of the whole group. Anyways,
they make money selling beer.
Now here's the thing.
For 200 years
it's not so, well, here's the thing, they're not rich yet. So these 3 sons, they don't really, I don't know, it just says the record somewhere that the Crowleys own, as Quakers, this brewery already. But these 3, Abraham, Charles, and Henry, what they go, and they marry into the Curtis family, and they buy Turk Street Brew House. Now here's the thing, Turk Street Brew House is important because it was the first brew house to implement scientific instrumentation in the brewing process. They were the first people to use the hydrometer.
A motherfucking hydrometer.
And they also laid the foundation for saccharometry.
Whatever that is.
Which is the measuring the amount of sugar in a solution.
I guess that's what saccharometry is.
This made them all their effing money. This is where all the Crowley bucks came from. All the mad Crowley crazy times he would have would be banked off this very simple, easy to understand American dream concept, actually, even though this is not America.
Yeah, people who are anti-America ended up living the American dream in England.
But this is the most... Well, that's the thing. His family was pro-America. He just wanted them to remain colonists, which was a very rational thing to believe at the time. I would have probably believed that, too, if I was an English descendant. I'd be like, yeah, but give the colonists some seats in Parliament and just let them have their, let them, you know, let's just tax them, you know, and like, let them have their
thing.
That
was the problem in the first place, that they were being taxed.
Well, they should have been taxed fairly. I mean, if I'm imagining myself as a Brit.
Yeah, if you were a Brit, you'd probably be like hoity-toity upper class, like, you know, not even caring about anyone, but like...
I'd be in America fighting the French and the Indians for the crown, baby. Anyway.
Nah, we're shipping you off to South Africa. Good luck.
No!
It's either that or India. Make your choice.
So here's the deal.
Or you're pushing opium on the Chinese.
Oh, man. This is what our fight was about, people. Okay. Seriously. So, okay, this is how the Crowleys got rich. They were like, all right, everyone else, you're selling beer at lunch for 4 pence? Well, guess what? You get a beer for 4 pence, a glass of beer, and a ham sandwich. They also had beef sandwiches, but ham was, like, mainly their main thing. So, they had a deal, right? They pretty much, and here's the thing, they pretty much invented.
You want a ham sandwich?
They invented the pub lunch, okay? The description of the pub itself is pretty legit. It was a big open-fronted, like, store, and it had a clean marble counter and 4 or 5, quote-unquote, handsome brass engines with small plates and glasses that were provided with a display of breads, biscuits, and cakes. It was very classy and inviting. It was kind of the perfect place to grab lunch. And it was a place that did well amongst people who didn't really want to hang out in bars and taverns, especially like young men that had jobs. And then, so they added in this thing.
Because remember, back then, bar culture was like seedy. Like that really meant seedy. Like that was some shit, dude. If you can't like drink at home, like that's some fucked up shit. This isn't like a pub. This is like if a bar is like, fucking a dive, you know?
Right, and I guess there was a lot of people that just wanted to have a beer and some lunch and without going into that world. They pretty much invented the pub lunch craze, and at some point they started serving, I hope, Benbury cakes, which I did a little research, are basically Pop-Tarts. They're like little cakes with currants in them, which sounds fucking delicious, man. I want some, God, I want some right now. I actually like currants. The little,
What are currants?
They're like those fucking, it's like, I don't know, it tastes like pie. It tastes like...
Oh, the little pie things?
Yeah, I'm getting hungry thinking about it. I just...
Okay. So little pie pieces.
Ugh. So yeah, it was very clean, very classy, marble counters. It was a place you wanted to be. And this
We're not even getting to Crowley yet, dude. Like, we got fast forward. Stop trying, you're getting lost in the weeds.
Nah, man, this is it. This is all Crowley. No, man, we got a ways to go. Listen, man.
You didn't get there.
We're getting there. Don't rush me. There's a lot of great shit here. So there was even a joke at one point in one of the heralds that was like, oh, the Crowley Ale's going to buy the Bank of England with their beef sandwich plan. You know, it was like, they were like, it was a joke how much money they were making. So
they're doing well.
Abraham's son, Philip, was a horticulturist. He had this amazing dead butterfly collection. And he had a huge bird egg collection that put everyone else's to shame. Abraham's first son was Crowley's grandfather, Edward, who married a Mary Sparrow and gave birth to Crowley's father. Crowley's father's name was Edward. So we got a lot of Edwards going on. And then there were 3 other kids too. So Edward and his brother Charles, apparently they made a lot of money diversifying their like pub business. They diversified the money into railways. And they synergized the railways with the alehouses. So they're just like cranking down the ale down the railroads and making all sorts of money, right? And then
railroads.
So before Edward Sr. died, this is Grandpa Crowley died, he gave an address to the Clapham Anthem, musing about the fall of great civilizations past and relating them to the present. Yeah, Edward Crowley cautioned that without God, modern civilization is subject to the same fate of those ancient civilizations. Particularly worrisome were the trends of smoking, drinking, gambling, cursing, slavery, socialism, spiritualism, labor strikes, women's rights, women's bonnets, dancing saloons, and children referring to their parents as governor.
Oi, governor.
Crowley's grandfather was kind of a respected dude. I don't know what the Clapham Anthem is, but it was a big bunch of big minds, and Crowley's grandfather is like...
It's the Clapham Anthem!
I don't know anything!
That sounds like some real stupid D&D bullshit.
Who knows
like,
what the hell it
oh,
is?
Oh, it's like some circle of wizards. It's the Clapham Anthem.
Let's not pretend like we know, but okay, so...
Yeah, dude, like...
But I just found it funny that Crowley's grandpa is just like, oh, societal claps, women's bonnets!
He's in some fucking wizard circle.
But I think he was also... he published a lot of stuff too, I believe, if I got it right. Okay, and then this is kind of old, so this relates to Crowley's later career. So one of his nephews, John Sparrow Crowley, was a civil engineer, like related to the railway business. When he got really scared once to death, fearing that his uncle was killed because of like a weird miscommunication on the railway where they were pretty sure that like a passenger train were going to collide, and he invented this thing called Crowley's safety switch and self-acting railway signals. So he created these like railway signals that would like accurately display what was going on, which if you fucking think about it, Crowley was the one who invented those flag signals for the aircraft carriers and shit that would land.
Yeah.
So it's like, dude, It's like, that was all in his fucking bloodline, man.
It's semaphore.
And then...
he invented semaphore.
Crowley's dad was basically a trained civil engineer, but he was mostly just a rich dude that was listed as a freeholder or a householder. So he just, like, took care of his estate, Crowley's dad. So at one point, he bought into a business with a guy named, with the last name of White, who had a patent for producing zinc oxide, which was a sustainable substitute for the white lead in paint. So we sort of have a business ship between Crowley's dad and this guy named White for replacing lead with zinc oxide. And which is funny because it had to do with the color white. I thought that was interesting. But for some reason, probably religion, I couldn't tell from the text, Daddy Edward Crowley dissolved the partnership at age 26 and dove head first into religion. So he had been a devout Quaker his whole life, like his other, you know, like his father before him and whatnot. And even his family's servant Anne's last dying words were, "Lost, lost, lost," referring to the souls without Christ. And he became an Anglican at first, a clergyman actually, but he converted to the Plymouth Brethren later, which is more fundamentalist. And he wrote over 100 tracts for the Brethrens, and it earned him mention in the Brethren's histories. So he's like a known, he was a published author as well. So the Crowleys are authors, they self-publish, like it's something they do. That's just in their lineage. And a lot of them have like a religious and a, like they believe they want to like influence the world and they want to accomplish. That's something that's like in the Crowley bloodline. It's in him, right? So I have a little story about how the Plymouth Brethren got started. So it was yet another fucking Edward, okay? Edward Cronin, who was an Anglican and moved to Dublin where there was a bunch. He was a Roman Catholic and he moved to Dublin where there was a bunch of Anglicans. He was like, "I don't want to hang out with you Anglicans." And he used Matthew 18:20 that said, "Wherever people are gathered for the Lord will show up." So he started having people hang out at his house and kind of like read the Bible and do it that way. Well, eventually it became Darbyism, and at some point it got so fractured that he even got excommunicated, the guy who founded the Darbyists from the Darbyist faith. So they got really crazy with that.
It just sounds like what people always do.
Well, here's the thing. They were pre-tribulational and premillennial. They believed that Christ was going to return at any fucking second, and that if true believers did shit like take out life insurance or retirement plans, that it was a sign that they had a lack of faith. And they would often, when they got into an argument, they would have to like find a way in the Bible to resolve it. And oftentimes things were resolved like, "It is written," or "So saith the Lord," was a common thing that they would say.
Well, so saith the Lord.
Yeah, it's like it's settled, you know?
It's like, "He without sin cast the first stone, so saith the Lord."
Now, here's the thing. Daddy Crowley... now, he was a fiery, well-spoken member of the Brethren.
We're almost there. We're almost to Crowley.
Dude, we're talking history, man. We're not gonna, like, we could even break up the Crowley episodes if we need to, because this is, like, the Crowley anthology, man. Like, you want to know about...
Crowleyology.
Like, people want to call this
is,
guy...
This is Crowleyology.
No, people in the conspiracy world want to call this guy the evilest man in the world. They want to make, like, dude, if we're gonna find some truth about this guy, let's find it, you know? Like...
yeah, that's the one thing. Like, if you ever read his shit...
is this super boring or what?
I don't know. I just want to get to him and his life.
Okay, man, I'm still talking... but we're talking about his daddy. He had daddy issues, right?
We're doing so much backstory. I hope this is informative for everybody.
Dude, back in these days, people would talk for 3 hours and listen, you know? Like, we're getting back to that, so... trust me, I had to read a book for once in my life, okay? It was difficult, so just bear with me here. And we're talking about Perturabo. Daddy Crowley was just, here's the thing. He would go around to the countryside, like, proselyzing to, like, small crowds. And this was, like, when that was in. And he had this special method of getting people where he would walk up to people and be like, "Hey, Andrew, what you doing right now?"
I'm trying to talk about Crowley, but we're stuck on his daddy. Which is you.
What about after that?
I don't know. I guess I'm going to dab.
Okay, but what about after that?
Maybe work on my D&D game.
But what about after that?
Some other stuff.
But eventually what?
Probably masturbate.
But then what?
I don't know.
Well, what after that?
Jesus.
Well, we'll get there. But, well, here's the thing. Daddy Crowley would do this game with people. It'd be like, "Well, what happens next? What are you going to do after that?" And they'd be like, "Well, I don't know. Eventually I'm going to fucking die." And he'd be like, "Well, you better get right with Jesus."
Oh my God.
That was it.
That's unbearable.
Dude, that was his thing. That was his main thing, dude.
you know, Naruto had a problem with getting right with Jesus.
Okay, so, but little Crowley, they called him Alec.
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 Alec Crowley. A little Alec.
Oh, little Alec.
Because his name was Edward as well, like his father and his father before him and the guy who founded the religion. And it's just so many fucking Edwards. Edward Scissorhands. Just get over it. Okay, so that's why we're giving him all these nicknames. Okay, Crowley loved his dad. They would always, before breakfast, they would sit around and read Bible verses, right? And this is where the story comes in where, like, Crowley was... He just idolized his father. And whenever he would act bad, his mom would call him the Beast. 666.
And they'd give him all sorts of opium because that was medicine back in the day. He just... Oh, the child has asthma. Give him opium.
Right. So... In my book, I haven't really got to that yet, but I'm sure it will get brought up.
Dude, I can't believe you haven't gotten that far. Like he's just getting drugged, like the first years of his life, like from 8 years old and ever onward, he's just high on opium like most of the fucking time. He looks like Tiny Tim from one of the creepiest like Christmas carols out there, like when he was a little kid.
Well, here's the thing. He didn't have any toys. He wasn't allowed to have toys. They didn't celebrate Christmas because that was like a pagan holiday.
So in all fairness, British Christmas and like Christmas back then was nothing compared to what it is now. Christmas used to be like more like Mardi Gras. Like, that's what it used to be like. It used to be crazy. Like, it used to be just a mad party scene of just getting drunk and...
Bells
and funny hats and, like, crazy stuff, dude. It's not like this, like, uniformed thing like we have today.
Like Saturnalia, like, basically. Yeah. It's like more...
Well, our Christmas was made in the 50s, so back then Christmas was actually, like, still this pagan rompus. It was kind of fun.
Well, apparently Crowley didn't have any problem later convincing his teachers, I think it might have been Tonebridge, we'll get there eventually, that was the case and that he didn't have to do the other Christmas shit like all the other kids. That was the thing that Crowley would do. He began reading the Bible at age 4. He didn't really have any other books to read. So this dude knew the Bible.
Well, you gotta know the Bible. Like, that's the thing, is you have to learn the Bible if you're in Western society, because that's like the foundation of our entire fucking society here in the West is the Bible.
So we'll talk about something Crowley did at his Plymouth Brethren school. He perplexed the staff, asking, how is it possible that 3 days passed between Friday evening and Sunday morning, in reference to Christ being in the tomb?
Well, that's weird.
He went around asking everybody. He couldn't get anyone to give him a straight answer.
Friday evening to Sunday morning.
How's that 3 days?
3 days.
Explain to me how that's 3 days.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he couldn't get anyone to give him a straight answer. So, and he made that, like, he championed that thing. Like, he took it to everyone all the time. And then, like, okay, so he excelled at religious knowledge, French, classics.
Well, okay, here's a way. I already got one up my ass.
Okay, go for it. Am I going to have to channel Crowley to answer you?
So,
a rogue planet flew by ours, then hurtled us into, like, a weird, like, gravitational trajectory that, like, made, like, 2 days elapse, like, 3 days would have. Like, that would also explain the blocking out of the sun for 3 hours.
You could have fooled Jack Parsons, maybe, with that.
Maybe, but...
I think Elrond...
I just pulled that right out of my ass.
If you were Elrond, and you said it all happened in the astral, then maybe.
No, I just pulled that right out of my ass. Is that, like, a rogue planet rolled up and blocked the sun? And then caused Earth's spin to, like, slow down, and then eventually it sped back up again. Gotcha.
Apparently.
Gotcha, motherfucker. I gotcha. Apparently. I gotcha, Crowley. I gotcha. I just Christian apologetic that motherfucker.
Now, apparently he was unbeatable at chess. And pretty much everywhere he goes, he just takes over the chess club. And at one, so he's at boarding school and this is hard to follow. He goes to so many different boarding schools. It's hard to tell.
He probably got kicked out of all of them. Or he kept going to different ones every year.
And it seems like some of them were good and some of them were bad. It's a little over-exaggerated how crappy his childhood was, because he had a lot of privilege and he had a lot of... He traveled a lot and went on vacations and, like, he had kind of a good life.
But he also was, like, a miserable little kid in, like, a blank room with no toys.
Also that.
High on opium. I don't know. Like, think about that for a minute. He spent, like, his childhood years high on drugs with nothing to do.
Now, speaking of...
But read the Bible.
Now, these Crowley tongue problems.
It's probably fucked him crazy.
So, Crowley's... Daddy Crowley's, you know, rich, and he has this really fancy doctor who discovered... Paget's disease, right? He's like super, super important. And he tells Daddy Crowley, like, you got cancer of the tongue. So there they are trying to cut out the preacher's tongue, and he's like, nope, I'm just gonna let God decide. Well, I guess God didn't kill him with cancer, but
took his tongue.
No, didn't take his tongue either. He decided against it, but the medical community almost took his tongue.
Yeah, they probably did. It's like, we're gonna cut your fucking tongue out.
Well, a year later, Aleister Crowley has a dream on March 5th, 1887, that his dad dies. And it wakes him up, and he's terrified. Well, the next day, when he wakes up, he finds out his dad died that night. So, that's...
He's got the shinin.
That's when it all goes to shit, apparently, for Aleister Crowley. Because before that, it was pretty okay, is what he says. His mom kind of takes over the legacy and starts sending out tracts from the old address book to all the Darbyists. Basically, like, he starts to realize his mom's, like, a little crazy. Like, all the people she's, like, having tea with that are, like, his aunts and all the people he's, like, kind of related to that he's really close with. All of a sudden, overnight, she's like,
they're all going to hell.
They're all going to hell. And it was a fight over baptism versus faith. You know, which one do you need more to save you or some shit like that. So he sort of realizes, like, wow. He describes his mom in his journal as a bigot of the most narrow, logical, inhuman type. And then later at the Bateman boarding school, he's kind of like, after his dad dies, he's getting into all this trouble. And at first they just, you know, chalk it up to his dad being dead and him going through problems. But, like, whenever they go to spank him, they have to cane him on the legs, because apparently whenever they would, like, cane him on his butt, it would excite the victim's sensuality, quote unquote. You guess that if you spank Aleister Crowley in the headmaster's room, he's going to get a boner. Now, here's the problem. He got put in Coventry. What's Coventry? Now, some kid ratted him out, said that he was a drunken sodomite, right? Now, this is pretty believable from what we know of Crowley, but apparently Crowley was, like, pulled into the headmaster's office. And
it's like, oh, you're gay? I'm going to pull you in, little boy.
Dude, no, this was the problem. This is how Coventry works. He was like,
everything that happens here, God will see it, and everything that is hidden will be revealed. So whatever you did, you need to fucking confess, and you're in Coventry until you confess.
And Crowley's like, I didn't do anything. I don't know what the hell's going on. He's like,
well, that's it. You're in Coventry.
And here's Coventry. You only get to eat bread and water, and no one even gets to address you directly. You're like talked to, like, oh, Crowley must go to the thing now. You know what I mean? And this went on for like a year and a half until his uncle, I think it was Jonathan Crowley, visited him. And he's like, man, you look like shit. What's going on? He's like, oh, nothing, uncle. Everything's great here. You know, even then when he comes home for Christmas, his mom is like,
okay, what the hell is going on?
Like, you look like shit, you know? Eventually, they catch on to the fact that they're just abusing the shit out of Aleister Crowley. They're not giving him any food or water. They're not, like, you know what I mean? Like, they're just treating him like garbage, you know? They pull him out of this school, and they, you know, he's so sick at this point, they diagnose him with albuminuria, I think it's called.
You're going to need some opium for that, kid.
Of course. It's a kidney disease, right?
And yeah, give him some opium. That'll help.
Here's the problem. His uncle, Jonathan, who was more like a normal dude, he wasn't as religious as his dad, and kind of like, he was like a cool guy. Well, long story short, like, he'd been battling albuminuria for 25 years, starts vomiting blood and, like, dies. So Aleister Crowley, he's just got, like, diagnosed with this thing. His only other, like, male role model just, like, dies of this disease, like right after.
Shit.
So, like, religion is just, like, he's just, like, got this really complicated psychology already, and he's, like, a super genius. And now,
drug addict and,
yeah,
and a little kid and fucked up in the head. It's crazy, dude.
So,
he starts off crazy.
Yeah, and so because of his illness, his wife's, I think it's his brother, his Uncle Tom, takes him out of school and is like, here's some tutors. Problem is Crowley's smarter than all of his tutors. So he...
Because he's been reading the Bible that whole time.
Dude, and he just, like, any tutor they send to him, he wants to demonstrate that he's their intellectual and physical better. So whatever he's getting into physical fights, getting into intellectual fights, no one can teach this kid shit, right? Because all these other... tutors just came from these minor Cambridge colleges, and Crowley's like the super educated person. So eventually he'd fall under the tutelage of this guy named James Douglas, who was a teacher of arts and philosophy at Sheffield. And this changed Crowley's life, because he taught Crowley that, like, drinking and smoking and sex could be enjoyed in moderation. And Crowley thanks him in his journals basically for introducing him to manhood, because before this he was, like, just obsessed with, like, sin and obsessed with, like, weird shit. And then, like, after he met this normal guy, I was like, yeah, just enjoy yourself a little bit, but don't go crazy. He, like, started to, like, normal out after that a little bit. Well, he was in his Uncle Tom's care. That's when he had sex for the first time, when he seduced a handmaid who was basically, he figured out later, was just trying to get a promotion, right? But he fucked her on his mom's bed. And that's when he said he felt like he was religiously liberated from all of his fucking childhood. So, like, when he fucked the handmaiden on the fucking his mom's bed. But she got fired for it, and he had to cop a plea to a lesser plea of smoking to get out of it. But the fact that he had to lie about it and that she lost her job, it, like, severely affected his psychology. He was like, man, that, like, as long as people have to lie to have sex, and, like, as long as people are using sex to get ahead and, like, all this other shit, humanity's gonna be fucked up. He made a decision, like, from his first sexual experience, like because there's no sexual liberation, the world is fucked up. He made up his mind, like, right then and there.
Okay.
Then, in 1891, Crowley, on a whim, just buys a 10-pound jar and fills it with 2 pounds of gunpowder, metal salts, sugar, potassium chloride, digs a hole in the ground, inserts the jar in there with the concoction, lights the fuse, and basically, he doesn't even hear the boom. It just leaves behind this enormous crater, shatters all the windows in the neighborhood. He wakes up in the hospital with all this gravel embedded in his face. That's when Uncle Tom decides to send him back to school, because he's like, all right, this kid's going to kill himself if we give him any free time. So he ends up in Malvern, Worcestershire, where basically getting fucked in the ass and bullied is, like, the norm. That just makes him even more messed up. But, well, but during that summer, he goes on a vacation with his mom to the Isle of Skye in Scotland, where he meets Sir Joseph Lister, who introduces him to competitive climbing, and it's like, immediately, he just takes to fucking climbing. Sir Joseph Lister is the guy who introduced antiseptics to surgery. So, like, Crowley's been surrounded by important people, like, his whole life. So, in 1892, Crowley attends Tonebridge, which is basically Hogwarts. Like, if you look up pictures of Tonebridge, it's Hogwarts. Like, they even have the tie with the fucking red and yellow tie.
Well, maybe that's what the what's-her-face was referencing, because, you know, you gotta steal shit from Aleister Crowley.
Well, he gets clapped from a Glasgow whore, and he writes a bunch of poetry about how unfair it is.
It's probably unfair to get clapped.
And then how everyone beats him up and stuff.
Yeah,
and
I bet.
But he spends all his time writing poetry, and he just owns people at chess constantly, and he's ridiculously good at climbing mountains. Apparently, he was the first person to climb the Devil's Chimney. Until then, it was considered impossible, because there's all these chalk cliffs, right, out there in Great Britain and shit, or whatever.
Okay.
And apparently, these are chalk cliffs. Like, you grab them, and they just, like, pull off.
Because it's chalk.
It's chalk, yeah.
It's not like a rock. It's chalk.
Yeah, so homeboy, by the time he gets to Nepal, he's like, I got this. You know what I mean? He's like, I'm prolific, you know?
So all you gotta do is train in England, and then you can go everywhere else?
Well, that's the thing, is, like, it goes in and out of popularity, because, first of all, it's really difficult, and it's very dangerous. And he climbed stuff that people said was impossible. Like, it cannot be done, and he would do it.
Because this was, like, the UFC of back then. This was, like, the shit.
And he was pissed, like, off.
Mountain climbers.
Yeah, because the papers would write about him, like, oh, this arrogant, misled, danger-addicted youth. He'd be like, fuck you, dude. I'm the first person to ever do this. Like, you guys are assholes. Like,
yeah.
And the reason he ended up with Aleister Crowley is because there was this... Yeah, so there's, like, this big Celtic revival thing. And so he's like, Aleister is the Gaelic version of Alexander, so I'm Aleister Crowley now. And at that point, like, he's now his own self-made man. When he gets introduced to the works of Percy Bysshe Shelley, he fucking loses it. He stops, like, once he reads this chick's poetry, he loses all interest in history and geography and botany and all of his other studies, and he just starts filling up his little apartment with books about poetry and books on, like, everything he can consume with poetry. And he's, like, walking around and writing poems, and, like, he has, like, a little dandy outfit, and, like, this is his fucking life, is poetry, dude.
So he's just like, oh, I'm gonna be the poet now. I'm poet Crowley. And
right.
Then mountain climbing Crowley, chessboard Crowley, now I'm fucking poetry Crowley. Look at me. My little fucking suit.
Oh, yeah.
Poetry suit. Should have a poet in every home.
You know, they've got, like, this huge supply line, because they have all this climbing to do, like, up this snowy mountain, and, like, his Sherpas, and, like, the locals are, like, selling off his sugar behind his back, and he, like, has a story of him, like, grabbing the Sherpa by his fucking beard and, like, throwing him, which is, like, a super bad local insult, like, grabbing a guy by his beard.
Yeah,
like,
that's funny.
Like, this dude was hardcore. Like, Crowley would just go off on a motherfucker. Like, he was entitled, he was educated, he did not give a fuck.
He looked at, he actually, like, started elitism. Like, he started our modern-day interpretation of elitism.
Like, he was just, he was the dude, man. And then by 1897, he was like, am I gonna just play chess? Am I just gonna be a rock climber? And he went, I think, on this chess trip to Russia, and on his way back, he ended up in Germany in this cigar-filled room with all these Germans, and he's like, whoa, this is my future. If I'm a chess person, I'm just gonna, this is me. Like, I'm gonna end up like these people. It's like, this isn't what I want. And then he noticed, like, sort of the same thing with mountain climbing.
I don't want to end up like all these other douchebag mountain climbers.
Just douchebag mountain climbers. Like, and at some point he runs, I had the name here and I don't see it right now, but when he got, it's funny. He would run into people in his mountain climbing days that were into alchemy. And the second he learned about alchemy, he was like, oh shit, I gotta know everything about it. You know, cause he was also prolific at chemistry. He understood his natural sciences really well. And then, so in his poetry phase, right? And he knows that being a poet won't suffice either, because
there's no money in that.
He's like, dude, people haven't even read the classics. Why the fuck am I gonna be a poet? Like, why would, like, people don't even care. Like, they don't even know what good poetry is. I guess he's on a vacation in Stockholm for Christmas holiday when I guess he takes it up the butt for the first time. He writes about it in his journal all, like, you know, like, all metaphorically and stuff. It just blows his mind, apparently. If you believe Jason Louvre says, that first experience happened to him in his Algeria working. If it coincided with his first, like, mystical experience, which is what the book I have says, then it would make sense as well.
See, this is what I'm talking about. Whenever you study Aleister Crowley, everyone's got a different fucking story.
Yeah, right.
Everyone has a fucking different story, so you never can learn who the fuck Aleister Crowley was. All you learn is what people's misconceptions about Aleister Crowley are. Like, we gave out all ours already. All those misconceptions, because there's no way of knowing. Like, the guy is absolutely fucking elusive. And we haven't even gotten to where he learns about magic. He's just barely scratching the surface of alchemy.
Well, we're going to end the episode with his first foray into it. I guess this was our big history episode. We've never really done, like, something so dry, I guess. But I hope you guys enjoyed it.
You love it. I know you love it.
I kind of enjoyed it. Yeah, I mean, I would like to talk more, like, okay, here's the thing. Let's talk shop then for a minute.
Yeah, let's talk shop.
All right, what do we know about Crowley so far? He's got self-publishing in his fucking genes.
He is high on heroin constantly.
He's been brought up in the most narrow-minded of religious morons on the planet.
He is the intellectual superior to everyone around him.
And he's a prolific rock climber that's already set records before he's out of college.
Okay, so first again, like, one more summary, because this is a list of his skills. He has vast biblical knowledge, vast scientific knowledge, fucking vast artistic knowledge, and physical prowess. Like, the guy's got, like, all the fucking things. He's got, like, the four elements all set up already.
Now, I've heard it said, not just because of Crowley, but as him as an example, that if you want to be an occultist and get into magic or mysticism, you should learn to rock climb.
Or some sort of physical endeavor. I don't know why rock climb.
Well, rock climbing is special for some reason.
I don't know why rock climbing is
now,
special.
Now, we've met some people that we don't necessarily get along with, and they love rock climbing. So maybe we have some bad taste in our mouth from meeting some maybe weird personality types into rock climbing. But from what I understand, like, you learn about yourself, you learn about your limits, you learn to trust yourself. You learn to, you know, like, holy mountain, give yourself to the rock. Rub your clitoris against
against their face. Yeah, we get it.
And the holy mountain, like, scaling the holy mountain, and like, also, there's the whole thing is like, okay, so the devil's chimney or whatever, that shit crumbled into the ocean. Like, Aleister Crowley is probably the only person who ever stood there. And, like, then his climbing mate was the only person to stand on the other one. You know what I mean? So, like, that's kind of, like, real life experience. You can't trade that in. You can't put, like, no one can take that from him ever. You know what I mean? Like, you could, like, if he's wrong about all of his occultism and all that shit, he still climbed Devil's Chimney first. He still did it first. I think that's where we start with Crowley. Like, he's the real deal. Like, he possesses the tools, the intellect, the money. Because by the time he's like 21 or 22, he's got the equivalent of $2 million just to blow.
In today's money or the...
Today's money.
In today's money. All right.
Yeah.
Which and is like not as much, but it's still a lot.
He's got two more coming and then two more coming after that, I think.
Yeah. So like the guy's already set. And then like his whole thing is now that like he's kind of accomplished, but he's like, I'm not really accomplished and I don't want to become accomplished in the fields that I'm being accomplished in. He's going through some weird Siddhartha shit.
A little bit, you know? Like
that's what like you do, I guess, when you're the adept of the new Aeon.
Because he had enough money for prostitutes, so it's like at some point...
Like, he could just keep buying drugs, and he did.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because the text I have here doesn't talk about that, but we know from his childhood he was addicted to opiates.
Because they were just giving it to him.
He introduced Huxley to mescaline. What kind of a drug user was this guy? Like,
yeah, some stories I read, he would be, like, at parties doing mescaline with friends, and they'd be, like, one person would be, like, rattling off on their... fiddle, and another person would be like reciting poetry, and he would like, instead of like joining in the revelry, he would just like stop and watch, and he would like examine how like the energy was flowing through the room. Like he'd be like, oh, you see how like it climaxes, like everyone's expressions like raises, and then like, you know, he was more of like concerned with the dynamics of the trip rather than partying out, which is something I would do. Like when I would be on psychedelic drugs, it'd be like I'm more of examining how everything changes and flows rather than partaking in it.
So yeah, he determined to find a material in which to work which is immune from the forces of change, he said in his journal.
So he's on, yeah, he's about hitting the spiritual journey at this point in his life.
I'm going to pull back from reading some of his gay poetry, just a little bit.
Yeah, because he's like the first guy to have homoerotic content in his poetry.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's
but
like...
But weren't poets gay forever and been putting gay stuff in their poems?
Dude, European artists have always been gay. Like...
Not as a bad
go
thing.
To the Getty and look at their medieval freaking exhibit and tell me that they weren't into, like, little naked babies.
Well, here's the deal. Robert Anton Wilson's like, you know, we actually have gays to thank for advancing our culture just simply because gays just have to raise less kids. You know, it's like they have more time to just be whatever, like artists and intellectuals and whatnot. But anyway, so, I mean, it would make sense if there's...
Well, women wouldn't have weird clothing if it weren't for gay men, I guess.
Or makeup, if it weren't for the Egyptians, or high heels, if it weren't for the royals, or all the... stuff people get, all the traditional women stuff is stuff that used to be for guys. It's like,
dude, yeah, like the back in the day, the high heel shit, that was stupid.
Unless you're riding horses.
Okay, so
Stephanie.
Christmas Vacation, 1897. Crowley's in Amsterdam, and the spiritual emptiness and the hunger is just taking over. He's restless, he's not sleeping. It's December 23rd. He's walked the streets all day. He's watched the sunset by the docks, and he's cradling in his hands a silver crucifix, and he's not finding the comfort he wants. And
I contemplate the wound stabbed in the flanks of my dear silver Christ. He hangs in anguish there, the crown of thorns pierces that palest brow, the nails drip blood. There is the wound. No Mary by him mourns. There is no John beside the cruel wood. I am alone to kiss the silver lips. I rend my clothing for the temple veil. My heart's black night must act the sun's eclipse. My groans must play the earthquake till I quail at my own dark imagining, and now the wind is bitter, the air breeds snow. I put my Christ away.
So that's him being like, I'm over it. I'm
Forgot. He's a really dramatic fucktard. Like, this guy is like super dramatic to the fucking max. He's not just a poet. He's not just a dark little poet. He's like a fucking showman.
Yes,
you know?
And a showman.
He's got timing and rhythm down to the max. Like, this guy's just like, he's given the show. He deserves the title. Even if it's all a farce, he put on a good fucking farce, dude. Like,
well, you
there are some recordings of him, and they are dope.
Man, I got a little jealous because you realize at some points, like, okay, the man had money. The man had an upbringing.
That's envious, yeah.
Envious. Did I say jealous?
I think you did.
Okay. That's envious, not jealous. So, okay. We'll get in. He had the resources to fuck around with this stuff. And a lot of the stuff about the devil was, is like, at that time when he just was over the Jesus thing, he just didn't have any other options. It was just like, oh, you got Jesus or you got the devil, you know? So, and he was kind of always obsessed with sin, and he figured, like, you know, like, what if these people got it wrong? Like, his whole life was like, you can never sin. And then he would get introduced to a sin, and he'd be like, that was awesome. And then he'd be like, wait a minute, maybe these...
so this is that walk hard scenario, that freaking...
Is this the Dewey Cox thing?
Yeah, the Dewey Cox
thing. What happens? Like,
in it's all like, nah, man, you don't want this. It's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
You don't want none of that. It, like... It makes sex feel great, you know? Like, that kind of shit. Like, obviously you're going to take it, because this is just advertised so well.
Well, I tell you what, man. I was reading all this Aleister Crowley. I've never felt more hostile towards religion than I have when I'm reading about Aleister Crowley. It's just something, he just rubs off on you, man.
Yeah, he just rubs one off on you.
Yeah.
That's Aleister Crowley, all right.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I don't remember where it is in his story, but it's like when he's a little bit older and he's staying with family. I don't remember the context, but there's like this one younger girl in the house and she just does something kind of innocuous. She has like a lover or something that's not part of the clan, and her family is just like balling her out about it, and Crowley just like listens to it for a little bit, and he's just like, you know what, fuck you and your god, and you guys are full of shit, and you shouldn't be picking on this like little girl. And like he just goes off, like he'll just go off on people, like about how religion is ridiculous, or about, like, he's not afraid to let it fly, dude. He's always in people's faces. Like, and then at school he
was doing Trumpisms before Trump ever even hit the scene, like 100 years before Trump ever even hit the scene.
Dude, all right. So he goes to one of these hoity-toity British schools where it's like Hogwarts, where everyone eats in the fucking...
Yeah, they drink fucking pumpkin juice, and they got owls that deliver letters to their friends. It's fucking... England is ridiculous. You think those things are satires? No, that's just how it is. It's all Monty Python and fucking Harry Potter over there.
Listen, man. Look it. I'll show you a picture of Tonebridge, where he went.
Nope. Good images.
Okay,
Yeah, that's how it all is over there. It's like, all just fucking castle bullshit.
But like,
there was a period of time where they just built castle style buildings just because. They don't even have to defend themselves from anything. They're just like, oh, castles seem so regal and very, very woody sort of structures made of stone.
See the red tie with
woody
the
woody sort of word.
See the red tie with the yellow stripes, and like, look at this is like the hall where they eat or they do mass, right?
Yeah, that's called a church, dude. That's what churches are.
Look at, it's Hogwarts.
It looks more like Professor Xavier's school for the gifted. It looks more like X-Men than fucking Hogwarts, dude. I'm sorry.
I'm not super duper familiar with either.
Okay, but that looks. That one looks Hogwartsy. That like that right there is some Hogwartsy shit right there. I'll give you that.
They're all these boys like, in suits and
like,
ties.
Those are floating candelabras and yeah. Okay, so it's a shitty school.
Oh come on, you wouldn't have fun there if it's a. I wouldn't go to a boys' school. Fuck that.
Yeah, exactly. That's the whole part that makes it shitty.
I would never, ever, 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 never. Ever waste my childhood on a boys' school. Jesus fucking Christ. Oh my God. Never, ever. Dude, now, see, this is... I can just feel Crowley in the astral being like, yeah, man, you had it good. What, are you kidding me? Like...
Co-ed fucking...
You didn't have to be a genius,
Luke.
You
get to go home every night after school, like...
You get to play video games.
Yeah,
and
you
look
get to
at
play
porn. And
you get to play satanic video games.
And, like, have a satanic girlfriend that grew up watching, you know...
Horror movies.
Yeah, man.
Slasher flicks.
Thank you, Aleister Crowley. Are we just going to throw you under the bus all the time in the conspiracy podcast? No. I'm sure we'll throw you under the bus for some of the stuff you did in Abbey of Thelema, I'm sure.
Well, we're not there yet.
We're not there yet.
At this point, we've built him up, and he's like Anakin Skywalker at this point.
Yeah, never step into the triangle, man. Never
we'll
do
get,
that.
We'll get there. We'll get there. But until then, I guess that's our episode.
So if you hated this episode, let us know. And if you liked it, let us know. Because, well, if you got to the end, it must not have been unbearable. So, anyway.
I'm sure you're going to let us know your opinions.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess fucking eat carrots, shoot lasers.